I don't know why people hate on Nickelback.
They do hate on Nickelback for some reason.
I got a picture of my dog where he looked like Nickelback. That's pretty good. Welcome to Building Bellingham. I'm your host, Leo Cohen. Today I get to sit down with a friend and mentor of mine, Ben Kinney. In the real estate world, Ben Kinney is a big name. He's built multiple successful businesses around real estate and owns brokerages across the United States. It's not often that I get to catch up with Ben. He's got so much going on, and I've got a lot going on, but it's always great to sit down, talk about the world, talk about business, and just talk about how we can recharge to be the best versions of ourselves. The more CEOs, leaders, and entrepreneurs I speak with, the more I realize how business is truly a mindset game. You have to know the numbers. You have to build the relationships, but ultimately, you need to focus on what you can control. First of all, yourself. So glad you tuned in, and let's get started. Mr. Ben Kinney, thanks for coming.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Ben is not only a friend of mine, but one of the first people that I met in the business. But since then, you know, a lot of what I've learned today in this business is from you. So I appreciate that. And thanks again for coming.
Yeah, anytime, man.
Yeah. So
it's been cool to see you grow.
I was working pizza before that.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. I was a cable guy before this. So, you know,
yep.
You never know.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to do. We're going to jump into that too. I'm sure awesome. You have a few stories about cable.
I do.
Yeah. So who are you and what do you do?
You know, it's a weird question because, one, I hate talking about myself. And I consider myself a pretty regular guy. I'm average height. I'm probably a little above average weight, and, I have a poor metabolism and I can't tan for shit. But aside from that, I'm just a regular Whatcom County guy that enjoys walking with his golden retriever and hanging around in town at the same place as probably most all the other listeners go to. But I think career-wise, who I am is I'm a Whatcom County business owner. You know, my only business I've ever owned or the first business I ever started was here in Whatcom County, and I just never left. And I wake up every day trying to accomplish our goals and our missions. My history in business is real estate, and that's all I've done for over 16 years in some fashion. In fact, I say what we do is we do real estate. We do real estate technology, real estate sales, real estate brokerage, training, coaching, virtual assistants, mortgage, title.
The whole thing.
Escrow. Yeah.
Concierge, essentially, right?
Basically everything home, right? If you could think of what do people need for their home, that's what we do. And I particularly focus on helping real estate professionals do a great job at servicing their customers.
And that's changed because when you started out, you started out with Keller Williams and you were an agent yourself. You're still licensed, obviously, but now your business has changed from being an agent at Keller Williams to now owning not just the Bellingham Market Center, but I believe, is it 9 more in the Northwest?
Yeah, we have 10 individual locations in Whatcom County or in Washington State, and we have 9 in the UK. Mm-hmm. Real estate brokerage offices.
So there's really different sections of your world. And what you're doing is you're trying to piece those all together to create the ultimate real estate experience, really ultimately about the customer, right?
Yeah, we have two missions. Like, how do we help consumers experience home ownership? In fact, our mission statement is delivering the dream of home ownership everywhere. And I wholeheartedly believe in home ownership and its effects on the community and the neighborhoods. And its effects on people's individual wealth. You know, the stats that some people throw out is the average renter in the United States has a net worth of $5,200. And the average homeowner in the United States has a net worth of $238,000 based on the 2016 census they do every 3 years. So we should have an update coming. That's a massive disparity of wealth between those two individual parties. And you never know when somebody's going to have to need that wealth. I always say that you need to make a little bit more money than you are now for three reasons. One, emergencies. Like, you never know when you're going to get cancer or get sick or something's going to happen to your kid or your a natural disaster or whatever it might be. And two, for opportunities. You never know when you want to start a podcast or start a business or buy this or buy a piece of real estate or whatever. And three, and probably most importantly, is money gives you the ability to buy your time back. And it's with that time you can spend your time doing something more productive. Or even better, spending it with the people you care, doing the things you love, creating memories and having experiences. And wealth gives you that ability to do that. And I think one of the fastest ways in America to build wealth is through home ownership. So I'm super passionate about helping the consumer experience home ownership and be able to take advantage of the gift we have in our country, which is the ability to own real estate.
Tell me a little bit about your first experience, like what it was like when you bought a house and why that's created this whole world for you.
Yeah. You know, I was a cable guy back in the late 99s and early 2000s, I guess. And I met a lady and she owned a duplex and her cable wasn't working. And I went out to her place and she said, I just bought this place. And I said, hey, congratulations. That looks like it's an awesome condo. And she says, it's not a condo. And I said, well, what is it? And she said, it's a duplex. Well, mind you, I was raised super poor, you know, in a cabin without power. And my parents, the cabin, my dad didn't even own it, right? And my mom was in a trailer, or travel trailer, or single wide, depending on where we're at. And they didn't own that either, right? So home ownership in itself was nothing I had ever considered for myself. She said, I own a duplex. And I looked at her and said, well, why didn't you just buy a house? She said, because when I own both sides. And I said, yeah, why didn't you buy a house? And she said, because the neighbors next door, their rent covers 100% of my mortgage. And I'm not a super bright guy, Leo, and I've always struggled, even stuttering and reading and a little bit dyslexic. But I looked at her and I said, you live for free? She's like, yeah, I guess that's the one way to put it. And I remember driving out of there and I'm like, I want this free deal. Yeah. I want this free deal.
The simplicity of it. Yeah.
And I went to this mortgage guy and he said, all right, you can buy up to $230,000 and you got to put $11,500 down. And I said, all right. So I saved up $11,500 and I called him up. I said, hey, what next? He said, you got to get a real estate agent. I said, all right. So I found a real estate agent and he wasn't particularly good, unfortunately, because he kept trying to show me condos and houses. And he went and showed me a condo and said, can we look at the other side? And he said, well, the other side isn't for sale. I said, you have to understand, I want the free thing.
Yeah.
like I'm signing up for this free thing. And he was never able to find me a property, but I started driving around Whatcom County and I would write down the addresses of all the duplexes that I liked. And I ended up finding one over by Whatcom Falls Park. And I started looking them all up online. And I noticed one thing is that some of them were owned by people that had a tax forwarding address mm-hmm. of outside of town. I'm like, well, they probably may not even want this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I called this guy up and I said, hey, I see that you have a duplex here in Bellingham and I'm a first time home buyer and I really like to buy a duplex and I want to rent in one side. And you know,
what did that cost at that time? What did a duplex?
$230,000 to $250,000 probably is what they're going for.
We should time travel.
We should. We should. Yeah. So I asked him, I said, hey, would you sell? And he said, yeah, I'd probably sell. And so I hung up the phone. I'm like, all right, he'll probably sell. What do I do? Well, I was going to call the agent that sucked because he wouldn't help me, right? But I called him anyway, and I said, hey, I found a duplex. I want to offer $225,000 on this duplex. And he said, they'll never take it. They'll never take it. So I hung up the phone, and I only knew one other agent who was married to a cable guy down in Everett, and I called her up and said, Catherine, I want to buy this duplex. And I found the guy, and here's the phone number, and here's the address. And he said he'd sell it. She's great. What do you want to offer? And I said, I was thinking 225. She's like, put your best foot forward, man. I said, all right, I'm going to put 227 because I was approved to 230, right?
Yeah.
So we made the offer and he accepted it. And I was able to move in and I almost accomplished my goal because the renters next door were paying $1,200 a month and my mortgage was $1,210. So I didn't get to live for free, but I got to live
pretty
for $10.
Yeah.
And turned out there was a bunch of college girls next door. So that was like super worth the $10,
oh,
right?
Totally.
Because I was 21 or 22 years old and life was good back then. I was living for free. And that started my journey down owning real estate.
So it came from you knocking on a door for cable and then doing the work to find this person and just asking. Isn't that interesting that sometimes all it takes is a question?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really, really strange that people are very afraid to ask questions like that, but it could open a door for you that could end up cascading into something. Like you're sitting here right now, probably for other reasons, but we met each other. You've met all these amazing people in your world. You've created this huge world, right? And people are thriving within that world because you knocked on the door for cable. It's kind of wild to think about it like that.
Well, I think life is a bunch of dominoes, right? And I got my job as a cable guy because my manager at the vitamin store, her husband got the job at the cable company. And it just kind of just led down this domino of doing that. And I bought the duplex because of the lady I met doing cable. Well, the agent that sold me the duplex from Everett, she gave me a book written by Gary Keller called The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. And it was one of the first books that I didn't have to read in school or college that I actually read. And I read it. I didn't get this idea of, hey, I want to be a millionaire real estate agent. What I read from there, it says, a knucklehead, dumb shit kid like me, I could actually own my own business. And the book was a blueprint on how I could own my own business if I wanted to get in real estate. And while working at the cable company, I'd already seen myself get laid off twice and then hired back. I've seen my boss got laid off, who'd been there since the 60s. I'd laid off my own team a couple times because every time they wanted to affect the stock price of their company, I thought it's hard to build a life or a world when it's all controlled by stock prices and somebody on the other side of the U.S. that's never met me and they're going to let us go. So I quit that job and followed the plan in the book, which was to build a real estate business.
When you said real estate business, and I think that I want to create these two worlds, because I think you live in the world of business and a lot of real estate agents live in the world of just them. They're not necessarily, they don't have their numbers. They're not tracking things. They don't have any leverage. They're working till 10, 11, 12 at night, whatever it is, to make sure deals are happening and people are getting in homes. What was that like for you reading that book, seeing the blueprint, and then you went out and did it? And what was it like transitioning from that single person on the hamster wheel to, oh my God, I have to do something about this. I have to get my time back because my time is valuable doing this thing.
Yeah. Robert Kiyosaki, he wrote a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And he had a follow-up book called Cashflow Quadrants. And if you took a square and you divide it into four squares, if you're kind of imagining that, in one of those squares, they have the E-box. And the E-box is employed. And that's where you wake up every single day and you say, I do it. And if you don't show up, you don't get paid, right? The vast majority of small business owners are actually employed by their own business, because if they don't show up, it won't continue to operate. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky enough to move down to the next box, they call it the SE box. The SE box is self-employed. And you know that you're in the SE box because you'll say, we do it. And that's in real estate, that would be, I have an assistant, or I have a buyer specialist or a showing specialist. But in every other business, it's, I have a front desk person, or I have a nurse that helps me, or I have some other employees there. But the business still requires us to show up in order for it to operate. Now, the next box is the business box, the B box. And you know that you're in the B box because you wake up every single day and you say, they do it. It doesn't mean that you don't have to show up, or that you don't have to lead it or provide the vision or capital or whatever. It just means that if you wanted to take a day off or a week off or a month off, or you got sick, it would continue to operate at its current level, or it would increase. And that's really what we should be striving to build, is something that has asset value, because a business, a company that you own that isn't in the B box has no actual value because nobody would buy it. We want to build value so that we can have a great retirement and live a great life, or at least give our business to our kids or to our employees or whatever, right? In order to do that, the business has to have a net income, and it also has to be able to run without you. So we should all be striving to go into the they box. And when you're successful in the they box, you should generate a profit, and you get to move into the final box where you get to say, my money does it. And when you're in the money box and you're saying, my money does it, that's where you get to invest in other things, or you invest in other people. And you'll see a return, and that business doesn't require you to be there because you invested in a good person.
It's interesting. Investing in good people, you've done that. How do you find people, and how do you decide what's the hiring? What is the process of identifying talent, finding the right person, going through the process? How do you do that?
You asked me a question a second ago. You said, well, when you're getting started, was it hard as a real estate agent to start a brand new business and to get that going and move out of that? It's like any business, Leo. You start off, and your primary goal when you're the business owner is to lead generate. And your goal is to lead generate for customers. And in order to be successful in your business, you have to do that every single day, right? Somebody asked me once, what would a restaurant be like if every single day, every customer that came in was brand new? So not only do we want new customers, we want repeat customers. So we have to lead generate and follow up and communicate with them. And that'll get you to a certain level of business. The next level for the business owner is not to stop lead generating. It's to continue lead generating, but now lead generating for talent, where you're looking for other people that would be willing to do what you've done in the way that you've done it, so they can go be successful in your business. And for many of us, that will be one of your greatest motivators, because you are now you have other people in your life that are dependent on you showing up every day. They're dependent on you for their livelihood and taking care of their salary and their payroll. And it'll drive you far further than even money, because money only does you so much good. You run out of a need for money at some point, right? But having somebody depend on you, that'll make you show up on your worst day. It's like having a wife and baby and dogs, right? It makes you show up when you don't want to. You get out of bed on those days because you know the dog has to get out and the kids have to whatever, right?
Wake up in the middle of the night. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, it keeps you up at night and keeps you driven. And
forces you to be somebody you wouldn't be on your own. That's the
cool best thing. Version of yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the coolest part about owning a business.
You find people. So we've both looked at, I think there's a dichotomy between talent and non-talent. We looked at this. So you're looking at these people that every day are kind of cracking the whip on you or coming back to you and saying, hey, I want more. I want to grow. I want to do this and constantly pushing you, right?
Yeah. You know, I think everybody has talents and everybody can succeed in something, but it doesn't mean they're going to succeed in your business or my business. We're looking for somebody that can succeed in what we do, right? And the way we do it. So I look for three things in a person. Number one, I look for a high level of energy. I want somebody that comes in and they lift the energy up in the room and they lift me up along with them and they have a strong work ethic and they don't want to work a million hours, but while they're here, they're going to give it 100%. So strong energy, right? And you should be able to feel it from them. Number two, I'm looking for somebody that's extremely intelligent, somebody that's smart, not book smart, but somebody that's not going to show up to my potluck every time with a knife and a fork. I want some of those freaking meatballs, you know, with the Hawaiian sauce. I want them showing up with something at my potluck, right? And when somebody's intelligent, they show up to your business every day with ideas and solutions and ways to grow and improve the whole organization. And lastly, I look for people with a high level of integrity, people that are going to do the right thing and treat our people in the way that they want to be treated. And if you're missing any one of those three things, you're not going to have a successful hire. I mean, imagine having a high energy, work hard individual that's extremely smart with no integrity. They end up elected.
Yeah.
Right? Imagine having somebody with a high intelligence and lots of integrity, but they don't actually have any energy or any work ethic, right? They end up writing books about how we could be successful, but they've never actually been successful themselves, right? They aren't going to show up and put it hard. Or somebody with a high amount of energy and a high amount of integrity, but they really have no common sense. They could bumble around and show up every single day, but nothing is actually going to get accomplished. So what we're looking for is people that have all three. And you have to look all around all the time to find those people because they don't grow on trees.
Right?
Imagine your business like, I'm not a super good sports person, but imagine it's like a football team. And from what I understand, you can only have 11 players on the field at any given time.
I think I can verify that too.
Okay, perfect. Well, a business is like that. Your business has a fixed amount of players you can put on the team at any time. But we don't treat it like that. We don't say, Leo, you know what? I really like you. So why don't you be quarterback today? I know you're not good at it, Leo, but just it'll be fun.
Yeah.
We wouldn't do that if we're running a football team, but we do that in our business. We say, oh, it's okay. That person's completely mediocre. They show up sometimes and they give a B effort or sometimes a C minus and they're kind of negative, but right. We allow that to happen in our business, but we don't understand that we only have 11 spots on our team and every person on the field matters in business.
Every person. Yeah. And I couldn't agree with that more. And you made a choice when you had been at Keller Williams. You were probably working your tail off just like you were when you were in cable. And we'll dive back into all that fun stuff. But when you found Jalene, who is a huge part of your world and very driven, she's got the energy and a high level of integrity. Tell me a little bit more about how you met her and how that changed your business to be where it is today.
Yeah, Jalene was my first hire. Like I'd never had anybody work for me in my career, not where I actually paid their salary. We had people in the cable company and so on, but she was my very first hire. And Jalene was probably 22 years old when I hired her, and I was probably 26, 27, something like that. And she took a chance on me, and I took a chance on her. And I remember sitting down with her and saying, Jalene, I have 90 days of your salary saved up. And if we can make more money in 90 days than we are now, I can afford to keep you. But if we aren't, it's not going to work out. And I said, are you willing to take that chance on me? And she said, yes, but during the first 90 days, we have to both be 100% focused on bringing in money to the business. And it was like that. She would show up. I would show up in the morning. She would hand me the list of people to call. She would hand me the doors that I'd have to go knock on, right? She would go send the letters out. She would hand me the paperwork to go meet with customers and clients. I would go do that. And while she was back there, she was, running the business, taking everything off of my plate that was stopping me from bringing money in. And it was amazing. We tripled our business in 1 year because I got rid of all the things that slowed me down. I was no good at computers or paperwork or designing flyers or doing any of that printing stuff or, organizing.
I think it's called arts and crafts. Brandon Nelson calls it arts and crafts.
Yeah. I would no good. Julian's a master at all things operations. I wasn't an operations person, right? I'm a negotiator, sales, presentation, lead generator. You would call it a hunter kind of. Like, I'm a hunter. You send me out there to go bring back the bacon, yeah. Right? But somebody still has to prepare it and make sure it doesn't go bad and do all those sort of things. And that first hire for me, that was life-changing for me. And she's still with me 14 years later. My very first hire still sits 15, 20 feet from my door now.
And she's doing really big things as well.
Yeah, she's running one of the biggest real estate organizations in the United States and Canada. And she's grown. And she couldn't have done it back then, and I couldn't have done it back then. But we grew together over 14 years, developing each other and lifting each other up and training and growing and becoming better leaders and coming up with systems. And you wake up after 14 years, and her and I are both different people.
But still in alignment.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge.
I ask the question every day, what do I have to do to continue to earn the right to stay in business with people like Julian? Because I have to understand that they have lots of opportunities. There's a million people that would offer somebody at her caliber a job, and I have to earn the right to stay in business with my employees every day.
That's huge. That's a different mentality than I think a lot of business owners have. Tell me a little bit more about what that was like in that moment of like risking it all and knowing that you're like, if it doesn't work, you're letting her down. What is that moment of like having her take over the operations part of your business?
You know, it was okay because I was really bad at all the things I was having her do, and she was really good at it. So giving up stuff was a little bit easier for me. But I remember when it hit me the most was about 2008, roughly September 12th or 13th of 2008. I woke up one day and all my real estate closings were gone. The real estate market had just crashed. And I had a whole business that was built on future revenue coming in, not current savings or current reserves. And because of that, I was not prepared for such an economic crisis like the real estate fiasco of 2008. By October, November, I had a couple of months with no closings, and I still had her salary, and we had all of our other bills and marketing and advertising and websites and all that kind of stuff. And I remember going home one night, and I literally started to cry, and I had to make a decision the next day. Was I going to pay Jalene her salary, or was I going to pay my mortgage? And if I didn't pay her, she was going to quit. And if I didn't pay my mortgage, my credit was going to go bad, right? So after probably two pints of Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
What kind, by the way?
Chunky Monkey for sure.
So you went both Chunky Monkey?
Yeah, okay. double Chunky Monkey. Nice. I came to work the next day and I decided to not tell her. And I paid her salary for the next couple of months and I just didn't pay my mortgage. And by December, I had 30, 60, and maybe 90-day lates on my mortgage. And because of that, my credit cards went to zero. They wouldn't allow me to have a balance because my credit score dropped, and my line of credit on my duplex went to zero because they wouldn't offer it because my credit score was dropping. And I had no way to pull out any money or to get a loan, and no banks were giving loans and no banks were giving credit cards, and I had to go fix it. And I made a decision at that point that I was never again going to put my people, my Jalene, right, in harm's way, and I wasn't going to put our business or our clients in that sort of harm's way because I wasn't being financially astute and I wasn't being prepared for things. And I completely changed my focus on wealth and money and business and expenses and profit that day.
So what did you do during the downtime? I know that you shifted your focus with your business during that time to jump into short sales and foreclosures and really owning that market as well, right?
Yeah. And by 2008, we didn't have the ability to do foreclosures and short sales because they weren't really there yet. They were just the start of the chaos.
So it was a wave. It was kind of a ripple.
Yeah. So what I did is I started focusing on pricing properties effectively. And I came up with a model. I call it the 555, five actives, five pennies, and five solds. And I come up with a bracket on where I think the home should be priced. and if I think it will sell or not. And if the seller refuses to price inside my bracket, we just won't take the listing. And I focused on price reductions. And I remember one day I sat my team down and I said, all right, we have $40 million worth of listing inventory. We need $400,000 worth of price reductions by next week. And they looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, I'm serious, whether it's $25,000 from each one or $1,000 from one and $399 from another, right? We're going to get $400,000. We did it. And the next week we did the same thing. And the next week we did the same thing. And the next week we did the same thing. And pretty soon I was able to get the prices ahead of the market and help those people sell. And by January of that year, I had the best real estate year, or best real estate month of my entire career. And those people that I got their prices dropped, I saved them. Because if they wouldn't have, and they would have stayed higher, in 6 months or a year, that house was worth $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 left. Less, right? And you just have to learn how to price your products so that it can move. And I had to become really honest with my customers and say, you know, we're in a situation where you're chasing a snowball down a hill and we got to find a way to get in front of it. And we changed those prices and we got in front of it. And then I started looking at other opportunities. How do I help sellers short sell their home because they were so upside down? Or how do we work with banks, foreclosures, REOs? How do we help builders get outside of their, you know, their mess or their situation? And then started building a foundational business from there, which led me into making some of our other investments into brokerages and franchises and things mm-hmm. like that.
So that was a big transitionary period in your business. So you refocused.
Yeah, I did something else that probably saved us. Is I sat down with my credit card statements and my bank statements, and I had a red highlighter, a green highlighter, and a yellow highlighter. And on there, I went through everything, and I marked it green if I had to keep it. And I marked it yellow if I thought I could negotiate it, like my cable. You can always, by the way, I worked at Comcast. You can always negotiate your cable and your internet cheaper, right?
Yeah, they'll squeal, right?
Yeah, they will. Tell them you're going to Dish Network. They'll drop it. So I went through and I would highlight everything yellow that I thought I could negotiate or I thought I could live without or I thought I could find a cheaper replacement. And then I put everything in red that I thought I could cancel or I was going to get rid of right away. And every month I would sit down with those statements and saw what I could get rid of. And, you know, it was dumb things like the gym membership that I wasn't going to, or you end up with, you know, I've found it in the future as I continue with this habit, you end up with two Netflix accounts that you mm-hmm. didn't realize. It's just stuff like that. So you create this habit of sitting down and actually looking at each line item in your bank statements and your credit card statements and finding stuff to get rid of, make it a game. And because of that, we got down to running a really, really lean business. In the real estate industry, we were one of the first brokerages to really pull out of all print advertising. And it's because we realized that if you took the, you know, the magazines you read at the teriyaki restaurant, right? When you're waiting for the spicy chicken, the real estate book and the Harmon Homes and the newspaper, if you take all those things and you stack them up to the roof, they resulted in less than 2% of the sales back then. That's way less than 1% now. But that's what real estate agents were spending 80 to 90% of their budgets on, were something that resulted in less than 2% of the sales. And I thought, well, that's dumb. Let's get rid of that. Let's spend our marketing dollars on things that resulted in 98% of the sales, not on things that resulted in 2%. So we just made strategies and we made changes and we stuck a flag in the ground and said, no, we're just not going to do that. Yeah. Bob Pritchett, who you should interview from Faith Life.
Mm-hmm. I've actually met him, yeah.
Awesome guy. He said, I made profit a line item on my budget. So he said, every month, I'm going to agree that this is how much money my business is going to make. And he said, I made it a line item on my budget. And he made all the other numbers work so that that ended up to his profit. And that's basically what I did. I took a profit first mentality and said that our business has to make X amount of profit or it's not even worth me having. Where so many other people in economic downturns, they just kind of throw everything to the side or they bury their hands in their heads in the sand or you buy a bunch of ice cream or, you know, whatever, and they don't do anything. And they wake up and it's too late. Everything's gone.
So you made that shift. You cut down your expenses because real estate agents like spending a lot of, business owners, for that matter, like spending a lot of money on the shiny things.
They love spending a lot of things that make their ego feel good. But if it doesn't generate a click, a call, a lead, or a closing, it's not something that you should spend money on. And you have to be real cautious that you don't wake up and realize that all the marketing and branding and dollars you're spending are just to inflate your ego or to win trophies, not actually to move the business forward. And I had to make that distinction. Mind you, you're talking to the guy that put my picture in the phone book, Right. So I was doing that too. I just made the decision after a while that nobody cared. Must have been my picture.
Yeah. did you get any calls from it?
A couple, but barely enough to pay for it.
You got yelled at though, probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
There were those people.
Yeah.
So you made a shift. You were focusing on the internet, which is where we're talking about over, you know, almost 100% of people that are starting to, this is, you know, late 2000s. That's where everybody is starting to find, and you know, information, find real estate agents, find homes, whatever it is, find anything really. And you said, well, why don't I just spend all my time and effort on that? That makes the most sense. So what did that look like for your business once you started spending all of your time and energy on that?
Yeah, so I came up with a rule. From 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., I have to spend my time on things that pay my bills now. But from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., I can work on whatever I want that'll drive my future forward. Because back then, I didn't have the luxury of going and working on websites or at doing SEO or blogging or paid advertising or Craigslist or all that kind of stuff. I couldn't do that back then because I had to actually still go do the things that got me paid, right? So, but at night, sometimes all night, Julian would come back into the office and I'd still be sitting there from the time she left me the night before, right? And I'd still be sitting there working on websites. And I worked every single night on building websites and building content until when you Googled Bellingham Real Estate or Seattle Real Estate or Kirkland Real Estate, we were the number one or number two during that time, or you Google all these different terms. I had something like 700 different websites up that we're using to generate buyers and seller leads up and down Washington State because the business was pivoting. And we did it from blogging, building websites, search engine optimization, Craigslist posting, leveraging and learning social media because that was kind of right in the beginning when it was coming out. And I found a way to generate leads for my business because your business really is dependent on how many leads can you get, right? Leads for customers or leads for talent. Mm-hmm. That's the foundation of any great business.
So when was the pivot point? As you're building this, you're putting a flag in the ground up here in Bellingham, right? You said, I want to stay here. That's where I want to be. And you started building this awareness of online, which is where 98% of people are looking. Now, what was that moment when you started thinking about more about brand? Well, you know, because brand is, I know that you are, all of your businesses are very well branded. When did that shift from, it's just me to being you removed from that brand, essentially, even though it's your name on it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I care about my brand as much as I do my reputation, because when you put our name on it, I care what happens. And for instance, you know, I've had agents screw up before or customer support people screw up or whatever, but the difference is when they do, I make it right. I wrote a check and paid for somebody's roof because one of my agents made a mistake, right? We replaced hot water tanks. We've done things. If we make a mistake, we make it right. I think that becomes your brand. Over time, I started thinking, do I want to be known as somebody that sells a lot of real estate? Or do I want to be known as somebody that changes a lot of lives? Somebody that, and I got real clear on what I wanted to be known as. I wanted to be known as somebody that helps people become millionaires and somebody that gives millions back in our communities. And if I could do those two things, that becomes my brand. And it transitioned over time from being, oh, you're the guy here on the radio. You're the guy that I saw your for sale signs, to saying, hey, I appreciate what you did for this, for the food bank or for Lydia's Place or for whatever those organizations are. And our brand changed. And I hope that our brand continues to be known as an employer that has great benefits and treats their employees awesome and pays them a lot more than, you know, other companies. And with the profits of our business, we're known as people that give back to the community. That's the brand that matters to me.
So you're a person that has a lot going on in a day. You know, maybe it's changed from these smaller things to five bigger things in a day that you have to get done. But I know that there's a lot of stress that comes along with that. And we all have our challenges. Tell me a little bit about you and who do you go to in a moment where you say, this was a rough day. Who is your person that you confide in on a business level and a personal level?
You know, I got a good group of friends and people that I can reach out to at any time. I'm very cautious though. Like I call it pooping in the kitchen. Like I'm very cautious whose kitchen I poop in because I don't want to walk in and then make my problem other people's problem. So I'm very cautious who I share with, right? What I normally do is realize that all my problems are my fault. I'm the one that caused them. I'm the only one that can do anything about it. So I try to think about what can I do to make it so I don't run into those things, or so those problems don't affect me as much as they could or they used to, right? So I put a lot of energy into understanding that winners focus on the things they can control and losers focus on the things they can't control. If I'm being a loser, I'm thinking, oh, gosh, the weather sucks, or the traffic is shitty, or this employee just did this to me, or I can't believe my family, or right, or whatever this thing is. I can't change any other people, and I can't change the weather, and I can't change the traffic, right? What can I change? Well, I can change how I respond to it. I can change who I hang around with. I can change how I use my time. I can change how I invest or use my money. And if I focus on that, I'm going to be happier more than not. In fact, I try to reflect on that. Something bad happens. Let's say an employee just quit. And I had this happen the other day. One of my people called me and said, I can't believe this. This person just quit. I said, all right, how are you feeling? They're like, I feel horrible. I don't know what to do. I said, can I give you some advice? And she said, yeah. I said, let's focus on the ones that are still here. There's 10 other people that are still voting with their feet and their butts that they still want to be a part of you. Stop thinking about that person. That person's already gone. Let's go love on everybody that's still here and let's put our energy into them. Because they still want to be with you, right? And you redirect your energy to those people. You aren't sitting around thinking about all the bad stuff you're having, right? And I'm not invincible. If I have a really bad day, it's ice cream, or I'll go to the movies in the middle of the day. In fact, last Thursday, Leo, I drove to the office. I parked. I sat in my truck for an hour and a half reading and dealing with stuff. And I put my truck in reverse and I freaking drove home. I got ready for work and I went there and I had really good intentions to get out of my truck, but I didn't. And I wasn't feeling it. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to send my butt home.
Yeah.
And I did. I went home. I made a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I watched some Netflix. And the next day I came back in all recharged, ready to go, happy and motivated and ready to rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you basically, you created this world and I'll tell you, it's up on my wall. It's the control triangle.
Yeah.
Can you explain for our listeners a little bit more about what that is and why you created that? Because yeah. Visuals are good, right?
Yeah. So I had a rough year, and that rough year I had to buy out a couple business partners, and my mom overdosed and passed away from drugs and alcohol. And 2 weeks later, my stepfather passed away. And on the day I buried my mom, I ended up finding one of my employees was embezzling money from me. And then towards the end of the year, I got home from a trip early and my girlfriend had a boyfriend. And when you compound all those things together, it was a relatively rough year. And it was almost more than I could handle. And the only way that I survived was I came up with a control triangle. And the control triangle was just that. I focus on things I can control. And at the base of the triangle, I wrote think. Because if I can't control my thoughts, my mindset, I can't control anything else. And here's an example. I read this book that said, Leo, if you were to put water into a bucket, what shape would the water be in?
Bucket.
Shape of the bucket, right? Mm-hmm. Exactly. So in our lives, we have thoughts. We have internal dialogues, the things we think is possible, this negative self-talk, all that kind of stuff. Those thoughts, they become the bucket, not the water. And our life becomes the water. So our thoughts are creates these boundaries in this shell that our life ends up filling. And when we're having all these negative thoughts, a bunch of more negative stuff happens to us. And it sounds a little hokey and weird, but that's what I believe in. I believe that if I can't control my mindset or my thoughts, that there's nothing else I can control. Well, once you master your thoughts and you start working on your mindset, you move up the triangle to time. And time is one of the things that separates all great performance, right? We all have the same amount of time in the day. We all have the same amount of days, right? But some people seem to get so much done compared to others. It's because they've learned to use time better. Steve Jobs said, saying no, innovation was saying no 1,000 times. Gary Keller and Jay Papasan in the One Thing book said, every yes must be validated by 1,000 no's. And both of these extremely successful billionaires said that success was about saying no, not saying yes. And what I found is a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs and employees, they fill their calendars with a whole bunch of yeses, and they never have time to do their priorities. And they're overwhelmed because they got committees and meetings and
podcasts and
all these other things you got to do, right? And they actually have no time to focus on things that matter. So one of the things I understood is that you can control your time. What you say yes to and what you say no to is a choice that you get to make. And how you vote on how you use your time will determine your success. Well, as you move up the triangle, it's who. So I believe that you can control who you're around, who mentors you and teaches you, who your coaches are, right? Who works for you, who your friends are, right? You can't control your family, but you can control how your family affects you. Like my mom, who I love very much and miss very much, she was a bad alcoholic. And if she called me anytime plus noon or past noon or 1 p.m., what would happen is she'd be drunk. And when she was drunk, she'd always talk about killing herself. And if I took that phone call at the end of the day, I'd be upset, right? Because I just heard my mom talking about not wanting to be alive, and it ripped my heart out, right? So what I would do is I just stopped answering my mom's phone calls after 1 p.m. I would check the voicemail, make sure she was okay. If she was okay, I'd call her back the next morning. Cool thing with an alcoholic is you call them back the next morning, they don't even remember that they called you the day before. So every call to mom was a good surprise,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she's happy, yeah.
But I didn't allow her to ruin my day or affect me negatively, right, when I knew that there was a high probability that she was going to be drunk, right? And if I can control my mom's impact on my life, I can control who's around me at work and who works for me and the influence and my friends. And I make sure that people around me lift me up and people around me give me more energy than they take. And the very tip of the triangle is money. And I believe that we have the ability to control how we use our money in our business and in our lives. And in most situations, if we make smart decisions about that, we'll have more opportunities and less stress and so on. Well, when you master all four of those things, the base of the triangle expands because you think bigger, right? You have more opportunities. And your time expands because you have ability to hire more staff or more leverage or have somebody else mow your lawn or clean your house, right? And all of a sudden you're around different people. You're meeting more cool people, right? You're talking to more people and they lift you up, right? And then all of a sudden you have more money and more ability to do good things with your money. And then your thinking expands and expands. And so this control triangle actually becomes this evolution, getting bigger and bigger to change in your life.
So the ultimate solution from all of that is just making sure that you're filling your brain with life isn't all positive, and so being realistic is good, but also choosing how you perceive things, choosing how you let things affect you, choosing how those affect your mindset, because that mindset's got to be a steel trap because that affects everything else, right?
Yeah. A lot of people get disappointed by other people. Like we go and you say, I can't believe that my wife or my boyfriend or partner or my employee or my boss, they let me down today, and then we let it really affect us. And I read once that said, people don't disappoint you. Our expectations of them are what disappoints us. And yet what you have to hear in is, those are our expectations. Like we're expecting some other person to do exactly what we think or what we want them to do. Like they have their own life, their own things going on, right? So I can't change them. The only thing I can change is my expectations. So I need to focus on that, changing my expectations and not letting other people derail my happiness or my life or my day.
Mm-hmm. And you've spent a lot of time recently, I think, more so is finding balance in your life, right? You went on a trip pretty recently. Was it 3 months?
57 days, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a long time. And being very involved in what you do, having that unplugged time. Tell me a little bit more about that experience, because I know that when we first met, I mean, I don't think I would leave the office. I could still see your light on. I'm like, geez, he's still here. But seeing that transition, I think that was really cool for me to see, because I know that was something you were working towards. What was that experience like for you to focus on what you enjoy to do?
Yeah, I think sometimes we equate hours to success, and hours are not success, it's the quality of the hours. And that's what I mistaken as earlier in my career. So I thought the more hours I spent, the more successful I was going to be. It actually meant the more I show up in my best possible shape, potential, energy, mindset, right, and use those hours effectively, the better I'm going to be. So this summer I got done with work. It was like 8 p.m. and I was driving towards the freeway. I was in Eastern Washington and I was getting towards I-90, and I looked at I-90 and I thought to myself, I'm going to take a left on I-90 and I'm going to drive on there. I'm going to get home at about midnight. All right. So I'm driving up, and instead of going left, Leo, I went right. I got right on I-90 and I started driving. And I didn't stop till I got to Missoula. And I ended up in Missoula, Montana. I didn't have any clothes. I didn't have anything with me. I got to Missoula, Montana, and spent a day there. And I'm like, I'm going to go to Bozeman, right? So I drove to Bozeman. I'm going to go fish for a day. And then the rivers were flooded. So then I'm like, well, might as well keep going. So I ended up in Billings, and then I ended up in South Dakota. Like, I've never been to Mount Rushmore. I'm going to go to Mount Rushmore.
So smaller than you think, right?
Turns out you only need 6 minutes at Mount Rushmore. Like, you get out, you're like, Mount Rushmore, that's cool. And then you just get back in your truck. And then
we're the bison.
And then you leave. But yeah, I left, and then I went to the next place and the next place. And then I got about halfway across the U.S. and I thought, I've never driven all the way to the East Coast before. I'm going to drive all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. And I did. I drove, and I went through Chicago and the Adirondacks, and I went up to Niagara Falls, and I ended up in Connecticut on the beach. And one of my least intelligent moments of my life, I was sitting on the beach. I got there about 6 p.m., and I was sitting there, and I was thinking, I was sitting on a picnic table, and two things happened. One, a seagull jumped on the picnic table right in front of me, and my mom's favorite bird was a seagull. And I thought to myself, I wonder if that's my mom. And I started thinking, I wonder what the seagull's thinking. And the seagull, I thought, the seagull must be thinking, I hope this dude has a sandwich.
Yeah, PB&J.
Yeah, right? Peanut butter and jelly.
With the crust.
So then I started thinking, I'm going to watch the sunset on the Atlantic Ocean. And I put my feet back, and I sat back, and I started waiting for the sunset, and I started waiting and waiting. And the sunset never came, Leo. It never occurred to me. I'm born and raised on the West Coast. The sun sets on the West, not the East. The sun does. They do not see sunsets on the East Coast on the Atlantic Ocean.
They're missing out.
They're missing out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I never thought of that, right? So I waited till almost dark until I figured, I'm like, I'm such an idiot. Just got in my truck and left. But yeah, anyway, I drove around the entire U.S., down the East Coast, across the South, and back up from California, Oregon, and I spent 57 days driving around the U.S. Every day I listened to podcasts and books. I read about 46 books on those 57 days. So you drive through a lot of corn country in the Midwest. I finished 4 books in one day, I think, in Nebraska.
And like Illinois.
Yeah, that area of stuff.
Gives me anxiety out there in the hills.
Stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I did a couple hours of calls every day and did a little bit of work. And every day I tried to do something fun, go to a museum or stop somewhere or whatever. And I came back kind of a little bit of a different person, right?
How would you say that you changed?
I made a lot of changes in my life and my business from that trip, and a lot of big decisions that are still kind of unfolding now of just restructuring businesses and putting things into place and removing stuff. But I realized during that time how little I was needed and where I was actually needed. And a lot of times in business, people come to you because it's easy, right? And you basically end up operating in this, let me Google that for you.
You know that website?
Yeah, right? Yeah,
it's a great website.
Yeah. Let me Google that for you. Or we end up doing everybody else's job instead of empowering other people to do their job. And I just had to change that. I had to say, I actually believe in you, Leo. I think you're going to do awesome. Go figure it out. Come to me if you have any problems, but come to me with a solution first, right?
You've said that to me before.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. Because we want people to be our future replacements, and they can't be our future replacements if they aren't thinking for themselves. So it was a great trip for that, and learned a lot and read a lot and still absorbing some of it, actually.
So, and what was that first call to Jalene? And for anybody that doesn't know, Erin Granahan is awesome too. She's Ben's assistant. She's much more than that, but what was the first call like to both of those important people in your life?
I never told them. So I was a couple weeks in, and Erin, my personal assistant, she's like, for like a week, she's like, you coming in today? I said, no, I don't think so. And then about a week and a half, 2 weeks later, she was like, I see a charge in like Chicago. Are you in Chicago? And I said, yeah. And she's, are you coming home soon? I said, yeah, maybe. And they were very supportive. And they took care of everything, and they were awesome. So, yeah, they supported me on that midlife crisis trip of 2019.
The reset trip.
Yeah, it's reset, yeah. And I might do that every year now. I haven't decided.
You should.
Yeah.
And you're outdoors a lot, too. What does that do for you to be out in the wilderness with no one talking to you? Because I can resonate a lot with that.
Yeah, I spent about an extra 30 days last year in the wilderness, whether that was in British Columbia or Alberta or Eastern Washington or different areas camping and hiking. And I write down this little sentence. Somebody else probably came up with it, but I say it a lot. I say, sometimes you have to get lost to get found. And I like to be out in a place with no cell phone service where I can go just just listen to what's going on and have some quiet time and just be out there away observing wildlife and taking pictures and just being in my own world. And that's where I get my energy. Some people get energy from being around people. I get my energy from the silence, from being out in the wilderness and woods. And I try to do that regularly and go take a week and go out into the woods and set up a tent and hang out.
I can resonate with that because a lot of times people think about being extroverted or introverted, being in social settings and being able to have conversations, but it's really about how you recharge. And I mean, that's just my opinion. And believe it or not, I know you're going to laugh at me, but I've found that I get drained sometimes when I'm around too many people. And I know that you're like nodding at me, but I truly have found that being by myself and not talking gives me more time to listen and think. And
I read this study from Harvard, and they were talking about stress. And people think stress is a bad thing, but think about working out. You, Leo, you're healthy. You like to work out, right? If you go out and you work out and you're lifting weights and you're doing curls or whatever, what technically happens to your biceps is you make little tiny tears. And those tears aren't what hurts you. Those tears, if allowed to heal, it actually grows back bigger and stronger than what it was before, right? In our life, it's the same thing. Stress is not a bad thing. Stress is actually the catalyst for growth. It's the lack of intermittent rest that stops us from growing and healing. So if you did curls every single day, right, and you're always doing heavier and heavier, you're going to wake up one day and they're going to be torn and you're going to be ruined, right? So what you have to do is you have to implement rest times on a regular basis. And you want to end up becoming a professional or a corporate athlete. And you think about a professional athlete, what they do is they have a 3 to 7 year career and they perform for 3 to 6 months a year. And then they have 6 months off and they have good health and rest and they work out for 3 or 4 hours a day. And then once a week they perform for 15 minutes or an hour or 2 hours or whatever it might be, right? And that's a professional athlete's career. But when you look at a corporate athlete, Leo, what do we spend, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years at work? And we work 10-hour days, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days a week, right? And we think 1 week to Hawaii every single year is going to allow us to recover and grow. It's not. We have a harder job than a professional athlete when you're an actual corporate athlete or a business owner. What you need to do is you need to institute intermittent rest on a regular basis every 90 minutes for you to be at peak performance all day at work. So what I do is I set an alarm every hour and a half where I take a break to eat, drink, exercise, walk, do something, read something, listen to a podcast, meditate for 10, 15 minutes, and then I go back to it. And if you do that, you will have 3 or 4 super productive hour and a half, 90-minute segments. And if you try to spend 3 hours or 4 hours or 5 hours working straight without that, you're actually less productive than I probably am in 90 minutes because you aren't taking that break and you're just burning yourself out and you start kind of working, checking your email, checking Facebook, doing that other kind of stuff. You got to institute regular breaks and remind yourself and schedule them the day before so that you can be at peak performance. So you can actually become a corporate athlete, a business athlete.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks for that. I don't take enough rest.
No.
My mom's voicemail says, remember to rest sometimes, and I don't listen.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Hydrate.
Yep.
Eat.
Drink a lot of water.
Right. All those sort of things on a regular basis. And a lot of people don't. So they get home at night and they're hangry and they take it out on their spouse or their partner or whatever they have. Right. Or they try to work their whole day through work and they're just not great performers. Mm-hmm. Right, you'd be much better working half the time and taking the other half in breaks than you would be trying to do these marathons every day.
You have this motto, think bigger, and I don't know if that's something you found somewhere else or it's something you created on your own or it's just your mantra, and it's on your truck, it's a huge wall where I used to sit.
Yeah,
tell me more about going forward with the future of Ben Kinney Companies, Brivity, all these different companies, all in one, Keller Williams, the franchise. What's your vision of what that looks like?
Most of the times in life, we set a goal. And imagine our goal is like a mountain. And let's be geographically cool here. And let's say our goal is to get to the top of Mount Baker, right? And we make all of our life about it. and it might take us 6 months or a year or 3 years or whatever it is to get to the top of that mountain. And our vision for ourselves and our business is, if I could just get to the top of Mount Baker, everything else would be different, right? So we prepare and we train and we work and we have failures and we push our way. And all of a sudden, one day we get to the top of Mount Baker. And we sit back and we look at each other and we say, oh gosh, I can't believe we made it. After all these years and all this time, we finally made it. And we give each other a high five. And then we start looking around. All of a sudden, we're like, oh my goodness. There's a bigger frickin' mountain. Mm-hmm. There's Mount Rainier. I can't believe it. We climbed the wrong frickin' mountain, right? And then we're like, stop, everybody. Stop celebrating. There's a bigger mountain. We got to go do that. And you go off and you make your entire life about the destination and you find no joy because you aren't making your life about the journey. So part of my goal is to ensure that it's not about just building bigger or getting to some number or something. It's about enjoying the day and enjoying the journey every single day. And I'll know I'll be succeeding if I'm building millionaires in my company, giving millions back, and our individuals are winning on a regular basis, and we do good. In fact, if you think about a vision statement, our company is win, make, give, and do good. And that's what I think about. But combined, like what we're trying to accomplish, you know, it was probably 4 or 5 years ago, I feel like I made enough money that I would need to make in my life. Like I can't spend anymore. I drive my truck. I love my truck. I have a good house and a good life and a good dog, and I can do basically anything I want. I give back and so on. Money doesn't drive me anymore. So now somebody says, well, how big does your business have to be? And I said, well, it has to be big enough so that it can accomplish each one of my people's dreams and goals. Because I might have a business that's big enough for me. I'm perfectly satisfied. But if I want Jolene to stick around and Aaron to stick around and Ross and David and the 250 other W-2 employees and the 1,700 1099 contractors and all these other people that are in our world, our business has to get bigger because they want to accomplish their goals. And the moment you move from being an individual producer to owning a business, the size of your business is no longer your choice unless you're selfish. Let your business be as big as your people need it to be for them to accomplish their income, their lives, and their goals. You make it about them, you're going to go a lot further. You make it about you, you're going to be unsatisfied and you're always going to want more.
Mm-hmm. Well, for somebody that is, I don't know, maybe like myself or another business owner or somebody that's growing in this world and wants to continue on whatever path they're on, what's your, and it's probably simple, what is your biggest piece of advice for somebody just wanting to start a business or grow their business or grow as a human?
Man, that's a deep question. I would say last year I did a great exercise. I wrote down on a piece of paper the things that give me energy and the things I enjoy doing. And then I narrowed it down to 4 or 5 things. And if I do those things, these are the things that move the business forward, move my life forward, and that I enjoy. And if I start working outside of that list, I come home burnt out, out of energy, unhappy, etc. And so go home and make your list of things that give you energy and you enjoy, and then open up your calendar and see, does your calendar reflect things you enjoy or things you don't enjoy? And if it reflects a whole bunch of things you don't enjoy, no wonder you're unsatisfied with your life or your business or your company or your career or whatever it might be, right? And it's your responsibility to figure out what it is that you enjoy and to try to fill your day with as much of it as possible. Now, I enjoy fishing and hiking and that kind of stuff. I obviously can't put that on my list. So I have to be reasonable. It's still work. So I came up with a list. Mine is I enjoy recruiting. I like bringing people into my company. I enjoy negotiating, whether it's for a piece of property or a business or whatever. I enjoy it. I'm good at it. I try to come up with win-win deals. I enjoy coaching, training, and teaching my own people specifically. I don't want to be a traveling doll that's going around just talking to everybody else. Like I'd rather be training our own people in our own companies or people that could potentially work with us. And I enjoy taking an idea in my head and getting it out on a piece of paper and turning it into something that's real, tangible, whether it's a class or building a building or building a piece of software, right? And if I spend my time doing those 4 things, I come home jacked up and full of energy.
Mr. Bankini, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for being here. Thanks for sharing your knowledge with us and just having a conversation. It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's nice to see you showcasing and talking to the people that are helping to build Bellingham. That's pretty awesome.
Thanks, man.
See ya.
Thanks again to Ben Kinney. That's it for us, folks. For show notes and links, and for more information on Ben Kinney, visit www.livebellinghamnow.com/blog. This episode was produced and edited by David Pender Lofgren. It was recorded and mixed by Andy Rick at Binary Studios. Our social media Jedi is Cooper Hansley. Our blogger is Tiffany Holden. Our theme music was written and performed by Aaron Guest, and our logo was designed by Sam Vogt. Building Bellingham is a proud member of the Bellpod Network, a collective of independent podcasts made right here in the city of subdued excitement.